Pilot TV. This week, we are dealing with campus troubles twice over. First, with Steve Carell in Rooster on Sky Comedy, then with David Morrissey in Gone on ITV. Plus, we crash back into surveillance culture with Holiday Grainger in the third series of BBC One's The Capture. All that, and both Kurt and Wyatt Russell join us to chat all things Monarch on Apple TV. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And joining me in the studio are my two co-pilots. It is Steph Thielen, editor of Crimwhizzle magazine, and TV's Boyd Hilton. How are you, Boydie?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, yeah. I'm pleased.
What about me?
Steph, you are a very positive, bubbly person. I just assume you are always okay.
I'm fine. I'm good.
Are you okay?
Yes, I'm
See,
very
I told
good.
You.
Thank you.
And you.
But she shouldn't pick her favourite, should she?
Right, okay. I shouldn't play favourites. I'm no longer allowed to inquire after Boyd's health.
I mean, this asking how we are is just a whole new thing anyway.
It's really thrown you, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, because obviously I don't care.
No.
I'm just making small talk, right?
Yeah,
of course. It's
pretending to be a normal person.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Do you That's do on the nice. Empire podcast?
No.
Not really, no.
Not really, no.
No,
no.
No, he says, with my colleagues of such lethal cunning, and then he says who you are, and that's it. Then he's already moved on.
Yeah.
I think.
What's wrong with all of you lot?
We're terrible people.
You are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What have we been watching this week? Steph, tell me.
Well, as is customary, I have watched every single episode that was available to us of one of the shows we're going to be reviewing. So it took up some of my time watching that.
If it's the one I'm thinking, that's not a lot of them, but it probably isn't. It must be a different one, but carry on.
No, I know which one it is.
Of course you know which one it is.
I don't. Yeah, I genuinely don't.
Okay. And I finished Bridgerton. So I've been spending my time finishing Bridgerton, and I am so, so happy. Now, I feel, Boyd, that you've been really not as enthused with this season as I want you to be.
A Bridgerton over troubled waters.
Yes.
Very good. I explicitly said so in the last podcast.
Yes, I know. And I'm very unhappy about it because you're missing a lot. I think I've said Benedict Bridgerton is my favourite. So I was very excited about this season. And the amount of times I've now seen Luke Thompson's bottom, I'm so pleased about. He gives such good bottom in this thing. It's great. It? Yeah, he's so
Do you think is it his real bottom or is it a stunt bottom?
Well, I was going to ask, actually. But you guys, don't know.
I don't think prosthetic bums are a thing. Like prosthetic,
not prosthetic.
No.
You get stunt.
Like
stunt
Joey Tribbiani.
Yeah,
a stunt bottom.
Yeah, it was.
I wouldn't have thought so.
I don't. It didn't look like it. It looked like the bottom that matched his face.
We should be easily. You know, if there's full frame shot of him, you know, naked, presumably arse out, and it doesn't cut to, you know, a close up or whatever, then it should be the real.
I'm trying to think of that particular scene, and I think you can kind of. It's a bit of a side profile. You do get a bit.
Bottom.
Oh, it's really.
But this is an interesting question. Like, what do you do if, like Al Pacino in Friends, not in real life, crucially, you are an actor and you have, but you have a substandard derriere. Like, do you genuinely, like, how do you break that to a director? Say, right, I need you to bring in a stunt bottom because mine really just isn't up to a close up.
Like, you don't. You get it written into your contract before, and you say to your agent, it's like stunt bottom required.
Yeah. Mm. So sun's out, no buns out.
Yeah. Mm. Exactly. Right.
They also did, in the old Lee Mack sitcom, there was a story, there's a thing where not going out. There was a bit where they genuinely did have a stunt bottom for him, a man with a better bottom.
Really?
It's in Would I Lie to You? Yeah, it's in that.
Someone with a better bottom came in to do the bum shots.
Yeah, exactly.
Lee Mack?
For Lee Mack, yeah.
Exactly. I think that he looks like he'd have a perfectly fine bottom.
But you never know.
Yeah. You know, like when actors say, does all their own stunts. They should be like, does all own bum stunts.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you have a good bum, you might want to make it clear that is your bum on screen.
Now you're delving into this.
Steady.
into these bums. What's interesting is when you're going to be nude on screen.
Like,
say, for example, a heated rivalry. I don't know what happened here, for example. It's heated rivalry.
Stunt bums there.
No
stunt bums there. But did they audition the actors, you know, did they have to do arse-out auditions?
Yes.
Is that acceptable in this day and age?
I was about
that
to say, I very
question.
Nearly said, well, no, that's because wasn't the director. But then I realised, I should probably not say that. So we won't go down that road.
No. But if everyone is in agreement that is a thing that should be done for a show, I bet that happens.
Of course it does. Yeah. It will be like the episode.
I cannot believe you do bum auditions.
Okay, well, hold on.
I think you probably do.
You'll know. You know the episode where Joey auditions and then Monica makes him all those things because he has to show his person, little Joey. We had to show little Joey, but he'd done the rest of the audition. I know, but I imagine they go, and now could we see the bottom? And then you just have to turn around and reveal it. I reckon.
Steph,
that's what
I think this only happens in a very specific type of porn that clearly you're into. I'm not sure that this is a real thing that get casting couch bottom auditions.
What else are you going to do? What, you know, just like send in a photo of your bottom and you expect casting directors to believe that is your bottom? They need to see it in real life.
I think they extrapolate. I think they imagine what they think the bottom will look like and they cast on that basis. And then if the bottom doesn't live up to expectations, that's when
Imagine?
Oh, wait a minute. I thought you were about to say they sack you if your bottom isn't up to it.
I mean, they might do.
Could you imagine the shame? Could you imagine the shame of going on set? You've got the whole crew around, like and then they're like, someone's whispering, they're saying, that bottom is shit. And it's got to go. And they've got to get a stunt bottom.
I mean, we really need to get hold of, what's his name from producer? What's his name, the actor you said
Luke
again?
Luke Thompson. Oh, please.
I often ask about scenes of intimacy because I think it's...
You do, actually.
It's one of my stock.
He loves it.
It's always fascinating. Yeah.
It is.
But what I can't remember asking about whether actors actually show off their wares before filming begins to make it clear what's happening.
It cannot be a thing. A bum veracity test.
It definitely used to be. Right. Now, you may be right. It definitely used to be. I've definitely read interviews with people where they say, oh, yeah, you have to get your bits out, you know, to show that it's what the director wants, particularly in films and stuff. Now, obviously, now we're living in different times and that probably is against... But my only counter to that is, as I say, if everyone's in agreement this is a thing that is useful for the show, the actor, then I think it may well still happen. I don't know.
One thing's for sure, we've got to get to the bottom of this.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Okay, that's one of the main reasons to watch this, because he is so gorgeous and there's like a great front on scene, and they have a bath and it's
front
just
on scene, did you say?
A front on scene. because it's not a full frontal, but it's like
was your like nice way of putting
no,
it.
No, it's just, oh God, it's so, there's just, I think it's as steamy as ever and it's wondrous.
This is insight into Steph's wank bank that I just never really needed.
It's
upsetting.
It is exciting when you're watching it though and you're like, oh, Luke Thompson.
Do you watch producing with Mr. Steph, like with the Leanne
no.
and George?
Oh God, we had a terrible
feels like more
thing.
Of a solo activity.
He put the Netflix on and I was like, no, don't, please don't watch Bridgerton because I'm not ready.
This is Steph's special alone time.
Yeah, but I'm not ready.
So he does watch Bridgerton.
So we had one of those arguments that sometimes couples have where he was like, I was like, don't. And he was like, I'm not waiting for you. And I was like, you will wait. And then it turns out.
To watch Bridgerton.
Then it turns out he was like, he said, I've just realised that he hadn't watched the second and third series. So late night, all I'm hearing now, right, when I'm like putting Gracie to bed, is him watching Bridgerton alone to get
suspicious.
Up to the season that I'm on.
Don't even know what to do with this information. Though I enjoy that this is the medium whereby you are explaining to your husband how he has to delay his own pleasure. That's lovely.
It is, absolutely. You can't, like, if you decide to watch something together, you've got to watch it together, okay? Anyway, I like to watch Bridgerton on my own. Luke and I have just got a special pond that needs to be served alone. Anyway, it's wonderful. I thoroughly recommend you delve in.
I bet you do.
I do.
Here's a question. I'm still fascinated by this subject. Is there more male butt action than female, say, boob action?
Yes, there is.
Which is interesting, isn't it?
There is a nipple situation. I feel like there was a lot of talk about what was termed the pinnacle. So there was a lot of talk about female orgasms, but there's not been as much female. There's been more male flesh,
I was talking to somebody who works in TV the other day who shall remain nameless, who said that a producer will not have naked boobage in any of their shows.
A particular producer?
Yes.
That you're just not going to name.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine.
Yes.
And they banned boobage in their shows.
They just don't want to have boobage in any of their shows, okay. But they will have, they're fine with a male Buttage.
Do you know what?
I think that's fine. There's a distinction there.
Which is interesting. Yeah.
We'll come on to this a little bit more later because this is something I want to talk about because I feel like there's been a real shift, actually, in the fact that I'm seeing more male...
Look at her little face. That whole face is lit up.
No, I think this is true.
It's
isn't it interesting? But it's weird how boob just becomes slightly unexpected. Yeah. When you see it now, like I think it was in Lena Dunham, certainly in Girls. I mean, copious amounts of Girls, mainly her own.
Yeah.
But I think it's shocking when that happens. I think it's much more shocking now to see bare boobage than
I was,
almost anything else, really.
I was shocked to see this nipple, actually, in Bridgerton. Yeah. But I, as I've said, I was delighted to see every part of Luke that I possibly could. And please do get him in so I can tell him.
We will do our best to have a kind of bum out interview here in the studio, if at all possible.
Yeah. Okay. The entire interview could be about this issue.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Boydie, what filth have you been watching this week?
I haven't watched Bridgerton. I need to catch up. I am going to do my last industry.
Industry.
Boyd's Industry Corner.
Yeah, because it also ties in with news, because just after we recorded last week, literally as we were recording, in fact, it was announced that there would be one more fifth and final season of Industry.
Okay.
So that was news that we missed out on just because of when we record and everything. But as we speak here today, Wednesday, the finale went out on Monday. And...
Can you do a spoiler. If you want to do industry spoiler chat, we have a place for that.
But you cannot drop industry spoilers on the main podcast.
Just don't tell him it's a spoiler because he doesn't watch it, so he's not going to know.
But then also, Boyd will get complaints direct to him.
But I know I could say flash, rewind forward by like a minute and then, you know.
But people are driving, they're jogging, they're going to be fumbling for the controls. Accidents will happen.
We've done that with your favourite shows before, I'm sure.
That's a different matter.
Yeah. The kind of twist in the expanse or whatever the fuck.
I'm going to say, how big a spoiler do you think it is?
I mean, the funny thing is, I've already mentioned this way earlier in the season.
He's already said it. Yeah. It's fine. Just say it again then.
Okay. Crucially, give everyone a breath. Boyd's on his bullshit again, so just be warned. He's about to ruin another show.
Boyd's BS.
BS, yeah.
So, you know, brace yourselves.
Boyd's on his bullshit.
Okay.
Boyd's on his bullshit again. Anyway, that's fine. I did mention this halfway through the season, that this was a thing that they've touched upon. But basically, one of the characters in this show, in Industry, as it goes on and on, and you finally makes it absolutely clear in the finale, kind of turns into Ghislaine Maxwell. So, like, she ends up literally trafficking young underage girls to a situation in the finale where men are present and men are being kind of looked after, if you like. They've literally taken that story of the whole Ghislaine Maxwell, Jeffrey Epstein story and kind of made their own version of it, but brilliantly kind of almost deployed it at the end of the previous season and deployed the reasons why this character ends up in this situation. It's just an ingenious bit of, you know, incredibly topical, fascinating way of using that story and have their own kind of parallel version of it. So yeah, that's one of the amazing things about this series.
I've heard a lot of people who have said that who've heard other people say that this season of Industry is so good that they've gone back and watched from season one, which is what I plan to do. I do plan to do that.
You should, yeah.
That was it.
It's not even that spoiler, I don't think. It's a fantastic bit of storylining and just exploring that whole horrendous world, really, and how amoral it all ends up being in the capitalist, let's face it, system. Why don't you watch Industry, James? It's annoying. It annoys me.
Bellend test, remember?
Lord, yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair, I was quite drawn into and captivated by the most recent season when we started it, in a way that I wasn't by the first season.
Mm.
So it has been added to the sofa list.
Oh, okay.
I don't know when I'll get to it, but I could just do
a James and organise my own spoiler special with the creators of it.
You should.
Okay.
I would applaud you doing that.
Mm.
In fact, Boydie, I think we should set that as a challenge for you for next week to organise a spoiler episode.
I am a busy man. I've got so much to do.
Fit them in, Boydie. Oh, you know God. You can. You should absolutely do it.
Okay.
People need to hear this.
There is a lot to discuss. I mean, look at the sex and nudity.
I was going to say that.
I did ask them.
Could ask them the bum question.
Yes.
You could ask them the bum question.
Maybe
do you audition individual
buttocks? You do see a lot of Kit Harington Harrington's bum in the series.
Well, I love Kit Harrington.
Kit off Harrington.
There's a kit, off, there's an incentive for you.
Oh, there is, no, I'm definitely going to do it. Definitely going to do it. Everybody, I'm hearing a lot of people saying that this season is really, has been the best.
It gets better and better and better.
It's like White Lotus, isn't it? I feel like the most recent seasons have been like gateway drugs for everyone who now wants to go back and watch the rest.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing I watched, which I thought I'd mention, is The Brits. I know it's pop culture.
And not even film, but music.
Music and pop culture.
We'll let you go with it.
But I just want to mention it because I think it was really good this year, The Brits. And a lot of that is down to Jack Whitehall as the host, who did a brilliant job. I think you've got to have a comedian hosting these things. You know, actors.
No.
Actors who are funny in scripted shows don't count. Often they make the mistake. They seem to like, the Oscars does this, the BAFTAs do this, where you get an actor or actresses, or even one or more of them, but they're not comedians.
I know, that's why I thought it was such an odd choice to get Kristen, what's her face, to do SAG-AFTRA.
It never works. Just get a fucking comedian.
Sorry, the Actors Awards.
Yeah, so for the Oscars this year, Conan O'Brien, second year running. Absolutely, as it should be. Remember that time when they had didn't have James Franco and
Anne Hathaway.
That was
excruciating. Yeah. And bless Anne Hathaway. She did her absolute best to try and salvage it, but it was just terrible idea.
So there's that. And they had, in the Brits, the BAFTA Film Awards was hosted by the Australian funny woman who's not a comedian either, who's a funny actress who lived in Matt's.
Is this a
Lucas.
Yeah, I don't know. She lived in a shoe.
So it was Jack Wilde did a brilliant job, and he responded to like people in the room, and he was funny. He went around the tables interviewing, spoke to Noel Gallagher, and he just did a fantastic job. But I'm not the world's expert on rockular music, but the performances were great. Harry Styles opening the show was absolutely fucking brilliant.
I did watch
did
that.
You see him?
Yeah, I watched the Harry Styles. I watched the clips of that because now you've said it's really good, maybe I should go back and watch it. But generally, I gave up watching the Brits a long time ago.
Yeah.
But maybe I should go back and watch it.
It was good. And Alex Warren, his performance was stunning with orchestra, full orchestra and everything. His song Ordinary was brilliant. But I wanted to say that Harry Styles is clearly being influenced by David Byrne. You know, David Byrne is currently, he did a show last night of Exeter Talking Heads.
Yeah.
He did a show last night in Hammersmith, which everyone says is one of the best shows ever. But that's clear. I haven't seen anyone saying that's clearly what he was doing with his dancing and with the backing dancers he had. Because it wasn't like a showbiz dance routine. It was like a David Byrne dance routine.
No, it wasn't. It was very much sort of like a contemporary dance,
exactly,
wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah. And if you've seen Stop Making Sense, one of the best concert films of all time, James, I've now... I always look out the corner
James,
of my eye.
Do you want to leave for like...
Can I? Yeah. Can I step out for a minute?
All these computer things, game.
I do always look at the computer corner. I can sense him, you know either like burning, losing the will to live, doing his emails, just or frowning on me for even carrying on this discussion.
I like it when he does this. He kind of goes...
Yeah.
It's like the James Rabbit of like, what's happening?
I don't know what you're talking about. This is all lost on me. I don't know the names of these people.
Exactly. Mm. But Harry Styles is also the man of the moment to mention a film because he's got the best scene in the film Project Hail Mary.
Hang on. It's a karaoke song.
Did you
it's
just ruin Project Hail
no,
Mary?
No, it's a karaoke song.
Okay, well, I was just about to say, I didn't know he was in Project Hail Mary.
He's not in it. Someone sings one of his songs.
Okay.
And it's fine.
So there's a song.
He's on his bullshit.
I know.
He's
relentless.
Oh. Shut up.
No, okay, that's exciting. I'm really looking forward to seeing Project Hail Mary.
You should see it. Everyone should see it.
As a film, not a TV show.
Yes,
James,
indeed.
What have you been watching?
What non-TV related things can I tell you about? Let's have a think.
Sometimes better than some decades-old TV show that you've decided to rewatch. And by the way, I think more anger is provoked by you admitting that you're watching age-old TV shows than by me going on about spoilers. Sometimes.
I mean, you watching Broadchurch.
Apparently, people have even been coming up to Boyd and saying to him, "I can't believe James has only just discovered Broadchurch."
I know we said this. Did we not mention this on the last podcast that people are aghast?
Yeah.
I mean, it is a bit silly, isn't it?
Aghast, infuriated.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I'm having the best old time. I'm now halfway through series 3 of Broadchurch. I will say, I think the third series so far doesn't feel quite of a piece with 1 and 2.
I agree.
It's maybe feels like I'm not as engaged with it as I have been in the previous two series, but I'm still really enjoying, you know, all the characters.
It's funny that you're having this Broadchurch binge.
It's great.
Really
I'm loving it.
You're loving it. Everyone else is appalled.
James late to the party diet. Yeah, look, I'm having fun with that. And then when I'm not watching that, I am currently on, I want to say, the end of season 5 of Star Trek Voyager while I'm playing that game, because I've just completed the section which would be Dark Frontier, which is mid-season 5. So we've met the Borg Queen. It's very exciting. Oh,
the single-player game that you...
Yeah, that's right. The survival sim. Yeah. Star Trek Voyager across the universe. No, across the unknown. Across the universe is the song. Sorry.
Yeah, that's the Beatles. Yes. You may have heard of them.
You may have heard of them. Although I prefer the cover by Fiona Apple. Anyway, other things I have watched. Paradise is a show that said to myself I was not going to watch the press screens for, because they basically made all except the finale available, and that is maddening to me. So I was like, no, I'm just going to watch it week by week. And then I watched episode 4 as it dropped, and immediately then binged all the press screens because I just couldn't stop watching it. Because it takes a fucking turn. Oh. It takes a turn.
Spoilers.
Is this what I would call a starting again show?
The reason why you would especially hate it, Steph, is we get to see the end of the world from multiple different people's perspective across multiple episodes. So they start again, and then they start again, and then they start again. So it is the anti-Steph show.
Is it Sterling K. Moss?
Yeah.
Is it,
oh, Sterling K. Moss? Sterling K. Brown.
Sterling K. Yes. What about Sterling K. Moss?
Specialist Moss. Sterling K. Brown.
Sorry. Sterling Moss was a racing driver in like the 50s or something.
Do you know, it's because we were talking about someone with that Elizabeth surname, and Moss, I was really excited about it, and it was in my head.
Confused with Sterling K. Elizabeth Moss. Oh my Moss. God,
what is happening? Yes, it's all the bums, isn't it? They've gone to your brain.
I don't know what's happening.
No,
Sterling Ray, I love him. He's
wonderful. Yes, yeah. he's the lead, and he's fantastic in it. But yeah, there's a lot going on this season, and
what episode
really
was that
good.
Again? Did you say?
This was four, which
aired as we go out now, and I have now watched all the way up to 7, but I haven't seen it.
So it's people starting again. And again, in multiple...
But it's great, and I'm loving it. Having a really good time with
Sounds
Paradise.
Dreadful. Have you watched any of it?
Only the two. I gave my slightly negative reaction to it.
Yeah. Remember, Boydie came for Shailene Woodley.
I've had people agreeing with me about.
Really? But, have you though?
Yeah.
Have you though?
But I do really want to carry on watching it. I really like the show. Yeah. So the fact that it's back with, that sounds like I will be on board with.
There's a lot more in bunker action going on.
That's what I want. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you just let me know when the starting again finishes and they've started, and then, okay.
I will let you know. And the last thing is something that I have not been watching, but I wanted to ask if either of you had watched, which is Louis Theroux's Into the Manosphere documentary.
Oh, I saw that.
I really want to watch, though I worry it will upset me.
I haven't had time to watch it yet, but it does look...
That's on my
feature
list.
Length. You know, it's feature
length. But I really want to see that. I think he's talked about how he thinks it's the most important documentary he's done.
Which
obviously you would do if you're doing publicity for a new documentary, but nevertheless, like, it's a subject I think that's quite important.
Is it about a male mental health, or is it about toxic masculinity?
It's about the manosphere.
Maybe we should
cover it on the podcast. Maybe we should do a Pilot Plus type thing, and it is feature length. But maybe we should do something on that, because I would like to watch it. And if I have to watch things, I quite like to do it.
I mean, if we review it, then you're pretty much in agreement that it's not a film.
It's a feature length TV event.
Great. Okay, we definitely should do that.
We've sorted that out.
That's over now, okay? We'll never come back to that.
Never again. Okay, let's move on, shall we, to a listener question. This week's listener question comes from Marcus. And Marcus says, "Dear Pilot, as a long-term listener to both Pilot and the other movie-related podcast, I have a question for you all, and it relates to TV show theme tunes. There are many composers who operate in the movie sphere, Mrs. Williams, Shaw and Zimmer, to name but a few, but what about TV? Who are the greatest TV theme composers? So I propose a Mount Rushmore with the following rules. 1, composer must have at least 2 iconic theme tunes, so might rule out Doctor Who and Star Trek, and even Mission Impossible themes, but there you go. 2, composer must have at least 5 other well-known TV show themes under their belt. So if something they wrote was used in a little scene Bosnian psychodrama, that doesn't count. 3, it doesn't have to be just UK or US shows. If they've done work in Europe or the Far East that is globally respected and heard of, then it is good. As Mount Rushmore has 4 faces, but you are but 3, I'm going to start the... No, you don't get to start it. Sorry, Marcus. But anyway, Marcus was suggesting Barry Gray, who themed Stingray, Thunderbirds, UFO, Space 1999, Joe 90, Captain Scarlet, and Fireball XL5, to name but a few. So who else joins him? I'm immediately... I hate to say this, removing removing Barry Gray from our Mount Rushmore because it is our Mount Rushmore. We will do so. The way this can do, Boyd will know from the Empire podcast. Each of us get one choice, one pick to add to Mount Rushmore, and then we have to agree on the fourth. That's how this is going to work.
Okay.
One pick each, well, then we will agree on a fourth.
Delighted as I am about this dissertation question. Right, okay. So I was doing some Googling. I don't think I'm going to get in the criteria.
I was doing some Googling, hard research. It's good.
I know because, okay, so I do want to just quickly mention that John Addison did Murder, She Wrote theme tune, which is a truly iconic theme tune. Okay, so Mike Post. Do you know what Mike Post is responsible for?
Tell me.
In the NYPD Blue?
Well, A-Team, perhaps one of the greatest theme tunes of all time. Rockford Files, Hill Street Blues, Law and Order, and Magnum P.I.
Hill Street Blues, that's what I was thinking of, yeah.
Magnum P.I., guys. Can you think that one person could have Magnum P.I. and the A-Team theme tunes under their belt? That is insane.
That's pretty good work. Okay. That is pretty good work. Okay, then that is your choice.
That's my choice.
That is Steph's. You are carving Mike Post's name.
Mike.
Into the mountain.
Yes.
Done.
Chipping away.
Okay, Steph's choice. Boydie, what is your choice?
I'm going to go for... I've got two possibilities here. Which one should I go for? I'm going to go for... Nicholas Britell.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Who did Succession, one of the greatest theme tunes of all time.
But crucially, also, worked on Andor.
And well, I'm about to get to it.
sorry, well, carry on.
He won't even give you the time, will he?
I was building up Succession, one of the greatest theme tunes of all time. The Underground Railroad, which I checked as also really good. A show called Zwei, which I don't even know what it is.
Right.
Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers Dynasty. Fantastic. In 2022. And Andor, as you so rightly say. So there you go. Britell.
Okay.
I'm surprised because I wondered whether you were going to stump for Cristobal Tapia de Vere, who obviously did The White Lotus. But crucially, I always think I love his Utopia score, as you know.
Yeah.
But no. Dennis
Kelly's
Utopia.
I don't think there were enough others.
No, I mean, you're right.
It's
so hard,
because the fucking criterion is so difficult. Five shows. I'll give you my other... I did have another option.
Okay, who was your other option?
Well, I thought the other option was one you would have, you see, which is why I've steered away from it, which is Ramin Djawadi.
Yes.
Because who did Westworld.
Yes.
I would say my two favourite theme tunes of the last... decade or whatever, are Westworld and Succession. I think
Westworld music is amazing.
Westworld music is
remind me of the Westworld music. Give me a little hum.
It's hard, actually. It's hard.
Does it require a concert orchestra?
It requires an orchestra. And luckily, we have one here. If you just like to know, we don't have one here.
And of course, he did Game of Thrones.
House of Dragon, Three Body Problem, Jack Ryan, if you like.
Yeah. I'm going to say that I also think the criteria should have been that it's hummable.
That's quite specific.
Yeah, but you know, like the ones on mine are quite hummable. Anyway, so carry on. I'm not going to hum them, but I'm just saying that's also a good criteria.
And if you're going British, there's David Arnold. David Arnold did Little Britain, let's not forget.
Mm-hmm.
He did Sherlock, which Sherlock's one of the other greatest.
Absolutely iconic.
Sherlock, I definitely agree with.
Good Omens. He did. Dracula, the brilliant version of Dracula. He works with Stephen Moffat a lot. All these things he does a lot.
Brilliant is a generous descriptor for that particular one. The first two episodes were very good.
I mean his music.
I thought you were talking about the show.
No. The show, you're absolutely right. The show famously one is genius. Two is pretty
decent,
good.
And then the third one is what the fuck. Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh my God, you two. Yeah.
We're
get
hard to
a
please.
Room, Jesus. The third one was what the fuck.
And Murray Gold, I want to mention Murray Gold, who's had an association with Russell T Davis. So he wrote the music to Queer as Folk.
Mm.
And he's pretty much worked on almost every Russell T Davis show since then, including reworking Doctor Who theme tune and doing all the soundtrack work for Doctor Who in its reincarnated form. So, and he's an absolute legend. Yeah, he does brilliant stuff. So they're my
cool.
Okay, so Nicholas Britell is your choice. You are carving him into the mountain.
Yes,
you're getting an A+ for this homework, by the way, because
thanks,
this
mate.
Is very good.
Yeah.
I struggled to whittle this down because initially my brain went to things like, you know, Star Trek composers or Mark Snow for the X-Files, if we're talking truly iconic. But again, in terms of volume, I don't think that's there. My beloved W.G. Snuffy Walden. was one that I kind of felt for The West Wing, obviously. But yes, things like that. He did Nashville. He did, Under the Dome, Studio 60, Felicity, My So-Called Life, Roseanne back in the day as well.
Wow.
He also did Friday Night Lights, but I think he gets disqualified on that because I think Explosions in the Sky deserve most of the credit for the Friday Night Lights music. So I'm taking that away from Snuffy. Sorry, Snuffy. I've interviewed Snuffy before. He wouldn't mind. Who else was I thinking? Daniel Pemberton.
Yeah.
Snow Horses.
Yeah.
Even Peep Show, you know, whatever you like. Yeah. I did come very close to picking Ramin Djawadi because he's amazing.
Yeah.
I've interviewed him as well. And, you know, because it's so many of the shows. Like, but in the end, there could only be one choice for me.
Mm. Oh, God.
And it was not him, and it is Bear McCreary. Bear McCreary, primarily for Battlestar Galactica, which is my all-time favourite TV soundtrack.
Mm.
Not the main theme necessarily, but all of the score all the way through it, I think, is wonderful for that. But also, he did Outlander. He did Foundation as well, lest we forget. He did Lord of the Rings, The Rings of the Lord.
I remember he did Lord of the Rings,
The Walking Dead, and My Beloved Sea. So see why Bear McCreary has basically done everything that I love. So it could only be Bear for me. So I am chiseling Bear McCreary's face into the mountain. If we're going to do a group one, I would nominate Ramin Djawadi, but obviously we would need to vote.
Yeah,
Remind me again.
Ramin Djawadi.
Game of Thrones,
most famous for Westworld, Fallout, Westworld. House of Dragon, Three Body Problem.
Done. I mean, you just had to say Game of Thrones to me. Yeah,
Ramin Djawadi.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I actually actively disliked Bear McCreary's soundtrack to Lord of the Rings, Rings of the Lord.
You were just like, he's no Howard Shore.
I just thought it was absolutely...
what is actively disliking a soundtrack?
I just thought it was over the top and overbearing and annoying.
Yeah. Wow.
I remember coming out of the screening. Do you remember the screening? They were supposed to screen two episodes season one.
And for technical
reasons, it broke. And I remember, and I just ended up, someone asked me, what do you think? I said, I think it was fine. I thought, but the music was awful. And people were like, what? It's Bear McCreary. People were absolutely furious with me. I was like, I didn't like it.
Boyd was all knives out.
Anyway,
for that.
Great name though, as well.
Yeah, they only screened one episode, and I remember Boyd was over the moon that they weren't going to show the second one.
Unimpressed. Yeah. Anyway,
he's a very, very hard man.
Okay.
Well, Marcus, I hope that has fulfilled your desire to see a Mount Rushmore of TV composers. If you would like your question answered on this particular podcast, do send your queries, questions, and feedback in to pilottv@empiremagazine.com. If they are interesting group discussions that we think will work well for the main podcast, then they will fall on here. And if there are all sorts of other things, feedback, other questions, we deal with those on Pilot Plus each week. And if you are not a Pilot Plus subscriber, the question, of course, is why not? Because it's not very expensive. It's like £3.49. I don't even know what you could buy for that. Could you buy a Saurine Malt Loaf value pack for that? I'm saying probably not.
I tell you what, you can't buy anything for that now, because I went into a well-known coffee shop chain and I was like buying a hot chocolate. I was like, I'm so sorry, how much was that? It's just ridiculous, the prices out there. So
that's inflation for you.
It's a bargain is what we're saying. And for that, should we say what we get? What you get for that? You get this particular podcast. I think it's like 17 hours early. That's very precise. You get this particular main podcast without any ads at all. You get spoiler special podcasts, and you get a second weekly show every Thursday. Honestly, it's not the gift that keeps on giving.
Mm.
Yeah. So basically what we're saying is if you love anyone in your life, then you should buy Pilot Plus subscription for them.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Okay, good. Right. Brilliant. Wonderful. Should we have this week's guests?
Please, God.
Guess what? It's only the Russells.
Wow.
Kurt and Wyatt. Kurt Russell and Wyatt Russell, who both play Lee Shaw in Monarch Legacy of Monsters on Apple and season two of Monarch, even though we all thought Kurt Russell died in season one, turns out he didn't. Season two is back on Apple now. You can watch it now. And both Kurt and Wyatt came into this very studio.
Wow.
And did an interview. Although, except it wasn't actually the studio, it was the one next door. But you get the point.
They came into
this building. Well, no. Oh. It was going to be me. Oh. I unfortunately was called away, but it was okay. It was okay because Pilot TV mega fan, Pilot TV obsessive Chris Hewitt stepped into the breach because he was like, the option to be on a better podcast, the opportunity to upgrade and appear on Pilot was just, I mean, it was more than he could resist. So he jumped at the opportunity to be given the privilege of being on the Pilot TV podcast. And he interviewed Kurt and Wyatt Russell in the studio yesterday.
Fantastic.
Wow.
Wow.
This is what happened.
Kurt Russell, Wyatt Russell, welcome to the Pilot TV podcast. Good. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. We had some tech issues a second ago. I had to run out the room and grab someone because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I'll be completely honest with you. And to share this, because I thought this was a beautiful moment, to share this with our listeners, Kurt, you yelled tech support.
Well, I saw you walking with him and I just, tech support, yeah. It always reminded me, I've always remembered that with Tom Cruise, the middle sky,
which is a quote from just, your own film.
Yeah, well,
which is
mine.
Amazing.
Not talking about it, but in it,
it's not your line, but it's a quote from your own film, which made me think: do you guys quote your own films?
Every once in a while, there's a couple of lines in Used Cars that I'll definitely quote. It's not really a quote, but it's just a scene where this, look out, Marshall Lucky. He turns around and shoots him. $24,000? That's too fucking high. He blows the car up.
There are favorite actors of mine that I've worked with.
Yeah.
That did line readings that I, you know, that I'll repeat only to myself. No, nobody even hears me, you know. Right. One of my favorite ones was Donald Moffat in The Thing.
And he
goes, it's gone, MacReady. It's gone.
Whenever like someone's sick. Or like, you know, they're feeling better, like they're kind of come out of their room for the first time in 3 days. Yeah. I was almost going to say it on a show and I didn't. And you just go, I'm all better. All better.
Will Brimley.
Yeah.
My favorite Donald Moffat line reading from The Thing is when he is tied to the couch. I'd rather not spend the rest of this winter tied to this fucking couch. It's amazing. Do you get a sense? Do you know when you've nailed a delivery, a line reading?
That
people will be quoting.
That's a really
you
interesting question. I've only surprised myself a couple of times.
Okay.
When I did, they became lines that became people repeat.
Right.
Such as? I'm trying to remember one. In Miracle, the way the line's written out, in the speech that he gives before they go out to play the game is, blah, 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 this is your time. You know, this is your time. And I did when I kind of did, I, and I looked around the room, I said, this is your time. And that's played in every arena. The other one was, the other one that I remember, it was literally just happened to me. We were late at night shooting, this was on Tombstone, and I've just shot one of these guys. One of my brothers is leaving in a train.
Yeah.
You run, you cur. I say, you know, I'm screaming at this guy. He's like, run, you cur. Tell him I'm coming. And I suddenly went, you know, this is, it's one thing to tell him you're coming. It's another thing to put it all on yourself and who you are and what you have become in that moment. You tell him I'm coming. That's a whole nother fucking kettle of fish.
Yes.
And I get that one all the time. You tell him I'm coming and hell's coming with me. You hear me? Hell's coming with me. I've seen that used very, many times. But those, I mean, do you have any of those that you kind of like?
There's some dud
here all the time.
There are some dud lines that like super fans enjoy.
From Lodge 49.
Lodge 49. Yeah. That was a very incredibly well written show. Obviously,
do you get people come up?
Jim Gavin. Hey, Jim. <he's listening.
laughs> Do you get people saying lines you have forgotten that you said?
Oh.
And you're like, that sounds like a good line. What's that from?
I don't, you know, I usually just kind of try and keep walking when that kind of thing starts to happen.
Hey.
Yeah, what was that from? I do a good job of letting things go in one ear out the other. But no, I not really. I can't, I'm horrible at remembering.
Yeah.
Like when something happens for me, it's like it's over.
Yeah.
And then I don't think about it anymore. Yeah. I don't listen for it anymore. I don't hear about it anymore. Like I live in kind of the middle of nowhere now with my family. Like I'm out. And so when I come back in, it's always like a re-entry. Mm. It's like I've been watching Severance lately. I really felt that.
Innie and an outie.
Yeah. Like when I do this, I'm like, you know, this is like my innie. And then when I go home and I enter this building, it's like, whop, and then I'm my outie again, and I don't remember anything that just happened. My work life and my home life, I do a very good job of making myself forget.
That's wild.
I wonder where you got that from.
Does that come from growing up in a household with famous parents in a way?
They didn't bring it home at all. Yeah. Like, it was not dinner table, nothing. It was like they went to work and then they came home, and it was like having a parent that would go to work and come home.
Dinner table conversation is sports and
how
was your day, rather than
what
was going on in your
issue.
Life?
Yeah,
that what was what we wanted to know. You know,
yeah, right. It was all about what was going on in our lives, which is what, you know, I hopefully give to our kids. It's like, that's what they're doing is what I'm interested in. It's more interesting than what I'm doing, in my opinion. It's much more fun. It's much less predictable, and much more chaotic.
Yeah,
it's funny, but that's true. When I think about it now, that's all you do as a parent.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm 24/7.
I mean, think about when you're a parent. You know, there's not even a thought in your head about, let me tell you what I did today.
No, I mean
it's like,
the second if they would you try and shit. Say like, you know what happened today? It's like, who cares?
Who cares?
It's so not important.
For a 7-year-old kid, what happened to you today?
Yeah.
I've never seen that. I've never seen that. In a, that's maybe a good idea for a show.
I don't know.
A kid that is so into your life.
Yeah.
You must be infested, right? To a degree in your and what your parents do and what your
I'll be honest, I don't remember
doing that as a kid.
Hi, yeah. Dad. Yeah, you're not gonna believe what happened.
I'm very proud. We've done a good job with Bud. He's my oldest, and every once in a while he'll just be like, "Hey, Dad, how was your day?" And because that's something that we, you know, when someone asks how your day was, you tell them, and then you ask how their day was.
Yeah.
But I don't think he really actually cares. I think he cares that he made the effort to check that box.
Exactly.
Which is a good box to check.
I can ask for toys.
Thanks, dude. And I get about two words into my answer, and he's
going on. He's out of the room.
Grab the box of chocolate covered pretzels and wants to go in the backyard skate on the ice rink.
How old's Bud?
Five.
Okay. Yeah. So is he in kind of the sweet spot in a way that, you know, for Marvel and Avengers?
No, he doesn't care about that stuff. He's not into it. He's into Harry Potter.
Okay.
Big time.
Yeah.
Loves that like magical world. He loves like the music. He loves the score. He loves like listening to Harry Potter on the way to the go-to stuff in the car. Like, he's really into that. He's not into monster things. I even talked to him about it because I was brought up the other day. I was like, "Hey, bud, do you like the monster stuff?" And he was like, "Nah,
not really,
not really." Weird guy. But he loves,
and you were like,
"Well,
there's a great show coming out on Apple, which might change your mind."
Yeah. I'll never forget. We were watching Minions.
Okay.
And I was in the bed with him, and I was like, it was on Apple. I realized that it had Apple TV in this place that we were staying. And so I switched. I just was like, oh, let's see what happens. I switched it over. And it's a Captain America Winter Soldier.
Okay.
And I was like, you know, he's watching it, and he's like, what is Minions? And he's like, it's Minions. And I'm like, okay, well, just, you know, just see what happens. And I come on screen. Yeah, I come on screen, and he's like watching it, doesn't say anything. I'm like, who's that? And he's like, Dad. He's like, Dad, are you? And I'm like, uh-huh. And he's like, Minions.
Where's
the
Minions, Dad?
Clear as day. Let's go back to Minions. Like, you don't give a fuck.
Hey, I gave it a shot.
About anything. God. Like, that's the way it should be. I'm like, great. It was almost a test to be like, if he was like, yeah, let me. Why? It would have been worrisome. Like, oh, God, that's worrisome. Like, that would be worrisome. He doesn't care at all.
That's amazing. So going back then to whenever you were five. And Kurt, you would have been making things like, I'm guessing, Backdraft and Tango and Cash around that time.
He was born in 86, so
yeah.
Backdraft, Tango.
So Kurt comes home with his firefighter's costume on. Still coughing from the smoke inhalation. And you're like, yeah, whatever.
Well, I remember going to set on Backdraft. We got the same, I got the same haircut. I got that flat top.
Yeah, you had the haircut, then I got it for the show. So we took a great picture.
Yeah, it was a good photo. We both had the same.
We were very
flat
proud
top
of having
haircut.
The same hair.
But I know, like, I don't really remember much about that movie being on set or anything.
See, that was Stickball. 90. You were only four. You,
the things
you were
I remember.
4 years old.
I was when I was a little older because I remember playing stickball.
Mm.
So Denny,
yeah.
who's here, like, today,
yeah.
We were playing stickball in the by the trailers. Like that's what I remember about the movies. It's like the stickball. Yeah. We'd set up a goal net outside the trailer, and I'd play goal, and
yeah.
and Denny and Jimmy Petty would shoot on me, and like yeah. you know that was the fun around the set. It wasn't like going. Going on to set was always like, okay,
yeah,
like,
whatever.
Same thing. Yeah, it's passed on from generation to generation.
So if you'd said at that point that, you know, because acting was never really on the agenda, I'm guessing for you, Wyatt, at that point, that one day you'd be in the same show playing the same character.
Yeah, no, that was definitely not on the cards.
That's a hell of a thing. When did they come up, the idea, and who did they approach first? Did they approach you both, or was it a pincer movement? Getting one, we got one. The other can't say no.
Years ago, I had had been with an agency and an agent, and that agent moved out of that agency, and they went on to create a new thing, which I wasn't really interested in doing. And so I was about a year and a half looking around for an agent. Wyatt finally said to me, "You should meet with Darren," who was his agent. Eventually, I did, and so I joined on. I just was interesting situation being. At the same agency as Wyatt, I wanted to make sure that, you know, all things were kept separate and you didn't have to worry about me that way, or he didn't have to worry about anything. And Darren's great. There was none of that. So it went to Darren, and Darren approached
both of us. And so they have this idea for you guys to play the same character in this Godzilla show. And we were both like, really? Yeah. They said, just listen and hear him out. You know, they have a good idea. They want to focus more on the humans. And I don't know. So when we had the meeting, it was like, oh, that is a good idea. You know, it's unique. It's very unique. And it could be really cool and interesting and bring a lot to the story and more to the monsters than the monsters bring to you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you're worried about a little bit. Like when, you know, I've done all kinds of weird things and he's done all kinds of weird things that don't necessarily lead you to Godzilla, you know, like playing a Mormon baby killer on you know,
under the banner of heaven
doesn't scream, Kong co-star. So I was like, I was hesitant, but then as the idea was as unique, as it ended up being, we said, well, if it can be as good as it is unique, then it would be a very cool thing to do.
We've been approached to do father and son things before.
Okay.
You know, approached, I mean, hey guys, take a look at this, right?
Yeah.
And some of them were okay, but if it was like, you know, Wyatt has had his own career for 17 years. He's established. He's starring in movies and doing his thing. And I've been doing it for a long time. So it's like, well, we're known actors now. So, okay, we can look at things. There's no, we don't have to worry about, you know, the idea that, we're only doing this because we're father and son. We're separate entities. Same as Goldie and I said that early on, and Kate and Oliver.
Yeah.
Meredith is, we do our own worlds, right? So that one, when it came, it was like, okay, but this, the idea of playing the same person was immediately kind of interesting. That we had not been approached with before. And when we were cast, when we all agreed and deals were made, it was like, okay, this is actually going to change things a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was a lot of a hurdle to get over. Not a little bit, a lot.
Mm.
And understandably so. It was not on the table before that. It wasn't on their minds. So it took some work. And figuring out where this character works best for the show and how it works best for the show. And this idea of going back from one era to the Back to the Future in the now era, 2015 in this case.
Yeah.
It was, we could really take advantage of what we could do, but you weren't playing father and son. You're playing the same person. So the approach had to be taken that way.
And because you're the older Lee, does that mean you take your cue in terms of the character's characteristics from Wyatt?
Yeah. Exactly. And I learned that real quick the first day I went on his set, which we have separate sets.
Yeah.
Went on his set and watched. And I was enjoying for 45 minutes or so, I was just enjoying Wyatt. And I was enjoying watching him do things similarly. It's like he was asking the questions of the director, or are they working with the other actors? Very, very much the way I would have. But then I was watching the different takes and watching what he was doing, how changes he was making. And I stopped watching him and I really started saying, oh, that's right. That actor and I are playing the same person. I need to get educated here. And I need to stop having a good time, swigging a beer and just going, this is great. Wyatt, this is going to be great. And I said, no, it kicked me in the gear. I was like, no, this is not father and son. You're playing that guy.
Same guy.
What's he doing? And it was informational and great.
Wyatt, with that in mind, you could have sabotaged Kurt. You could have. You could have.
He's like a backflip guy. Every time he does something good, he does a backflip. What?
He speaks the Welsh accent every now and again.
I'm doing the whole thing with a Filipino accent.
Yeah, the whole thing with the crossed eyes. I didn't plan on that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he's an opera singer. He sings opera now and again.
I thought that was inferred.
Then you'd be like, no, he got rid of all that years and years ago. But was it a one and done in your minds for you? Because season one.
Yeah, because season one.
You didn't know. Both in interesting places.
It was not told to us that we were going to do more than one season for sure. It was like the hope is always that you do another season. Obviously, they weren't hoping on doing one in the end. But like every show that I've ever done, it's like you might only get one season, so do the best you can. And then again, like when it was over, it was like, I don't know, it comes out and people decide if they like it and watch it and if Apple wants to make another one. But it was not something that we were talking about season two and what was going to happen, and it was just about that season. It didn't end that way, really.
I mean, we distinctly didn't think about a season two. The way that season finished on paper was his young Lee says to her, she says, aren't you, they get into a row early on when they first meet, and he tells Lee, you can leave now. And he turns around and says, I'm out of here. She says, aren't you supposed to salute when your mission's complete? Being wise ass. And he just keeps on going. He turns around and says, when my mission's complete, I will.
Yep.
Anyway, now we get to the end. And I said to the director, oh, I want to do this thing at the end here where when the pod goes up.
Oh, yeah.
I'm back. You see me get up. The wind's blowing because the pod took off. And I'm looking at it. And she's looking at me through the window as the pod's going up. And I want to salute her. My mission's finished. And then I see Godzilla. That was the end. You see Godzilla there. He just looks at me and moves on. And I'm down there now.
Mm.
That was the end of it.
Mm.
And they didn't do any of that. They just had me say, well, I did that too, where I cried my hands and I said, I just ad-libbed, thank you for everything.
Yeah.
And that was the end of him. He was gone. And then you follow them up and then you get into when they arrive up there. So it was the end of a show.
That was it. Yeah.
The end of the season.
That was it for him. And and then you heard that Godzilla and Kong had signed on for another season. You were like, we're in.
we were excited about Kong. Godzilla was always an issue.
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah.
Like, oh, God. Really?
It's new.
Kong's pretty cool.
And Titan X, which is the new monster that they introduced, that was exciting, but also a little nerve-wracking because Kong and Godzilla are like pantheon on the Mount Rushmore of Zillas.
I mean, they're the size of Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. And this is a new one that you're bringing in, and it's like, well, people like it. Is it going to look cool? So you don't know. You have no idea. They're just like, there's this Titan X monster, and you're like, okay, what does it do? And you're reacting to it, and then I went into a meeting, and I saw a picture of it, a rendering.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be cool. People are going to love it.
And I didn't. I looked at it and I went, oh, talk about a diva. I was like, I don't know. When this gets into action, you know, we're laying heavy on this. But boy, I'll tell you what, they are fantastic at what they do.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Each episode, when you look at this show, 10 episodes, it's
10 movies.
It's 10 movies. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And when you see it on the big screen, it's a movie. It's epic. It's epic in size.
It's a hell of a thing. And we can't say too much about what lies in store for you guys in season 2 of this show. But you know, are you hoping at some point that maybe can both leads occupy the same space?
Time bending. There's
I mean, it is. It is interesting what we did.
Yeah,
you know, keep your eyes on 7 and 10. It was something that we wanted to do the first year. We actually shot something, the two of us in a situation. I'll just put it that way.
Yep.
And it was, they called us and said, we can't put this in there. Why? And they said, it just changes the arc of the whole show. It just, you suddenly just want to walk. What do we, you know, what is this now? And they said, yeah, understandable. But if there's any chance that we do end up doing a second season, that was, that's my number one call
that's
for
the thing, yeah,
thank
you.
And we held true to that. And we did some, we did an interesting thing this year. One of the things that this show has that now, that, you know, everybody has talked to us about is in the second year. This is a hell of a group of actors. They're really good.
Yeah,
I mean, they're just all really good.
Yeah,
and everything fits in that regard. So that's heavier. That's stronger this year too.
Amazing, guys. On that note, I'm going to let you go. It's been an absolute pleasure. Wyatt, Kurt, thanks so much indeed.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
To you again.
Tech support.
That was Kurt and Wyatt Russell versus Chris Hewitt. And time now for this week's news. What do you chaps have for me?
I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to just say it anyway. Okay, so...
what do you mean? It's quite a rambling introduction to you. It's almost like you're playing for time.
Well, okay, right. So Game of Thrones being a TV show, film, okay, a script already written...
First word, sounds like. What is this?
A script has already been written by the boss of Netflix... hit thriller. See, I'm using.
Are you reading a Google Translate of the story?
Wait.
Is this AI stuff?
I'm just trying to get this news story through because I know it's about a film, but I really want to say
I think
it.
We need the Boyd bot, like, ultimately at this point.
Right, so.
It's a film. There's a Game of Thrones film coming.
Yes, but listen, you're going to really like this because Bo Willimon.
Yes.
Andor. Writer is doing the
yes,
doing
one
the
of the Andor writers, by the way, and the House of Cards creator, we should say.
Oh, God, you know what? I'm going to do a House of Cards rewatch.
I mean, it's a bit problematic now, but sure, you go for it.
I do.
Mainly
love
just
it,
to see how good Kevin Spacey was.
He was amazing.
I'm joking.
He was good.
He was good.
No, everyone was good in it.
He was, but, you know, obviously everything awful aside, but he, yeah. I mean, not aside because it matters, but Jesus.
Wow, this is going well. I'm enjoying it.
Okay. Anyway, that's exciting. And it is TV adjacent.
Yes. You know, there were two big TV to film announcements this week,
okay,
right? Because you're right, there was Game of Thrones, which is big. There's also Ghosts. They announced that they're doing a film of Ghosts,
the
incredibly popular.
Oh, was that what the door thing?
Yeah, yeah, that was the door thing.
Was.
Yeah, it was really clever.
We've had a finale for the show.
Yeah, but it wasn't a film finale, was it?
No, but was the story not wrapped up in the film?
It was, I didn't see it. But so. It's not to stop them coming back. It's quite an easy way. It's easy plot-wise to bring them back to go. The ghosts, I was going to say, didn't all die. Of course, ironically.
Yeah, ironically, that had already happened.
The living humans didn't all die either. So the ghosts are already dead. But yeah, no, there will be a ghost.
That is the nature of being ghosts.
Yeah, there will be. Really good news. But you could sense it's the kind of show that would translate to a good feature length. No, you're not.
I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know. No, I'm really excited. Yeah.
You're
no, I was just thinking about it. I was thinking about why I didn't like because everyone's doing the door thing because it was on Instagram, wasn't it? It was on socials with the door being opened.
Yes.
Exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, are those stories TV stories or are they film stories? We can debate that.
In the same way as we were discussing beforehand that Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man, is a film.
Yes.
But there is an argument that it is germane to this podcast. We may need to cover it in some capacity.
It's definitely germane. Yeah.
We definitely need to cover it. Oh, you're on fire today. You're really tickling me.
It was all the bum chat at the top of the show, wasn't it? It's made everyone giddy
on the bums. Yeah.
Right, so I'm also going to say that Robert Louis Stevenson.
Oh, Robbie Louis Stevenson, famous
Robbie. Yes. Robbie Williams did perform at the Brits as well, by the way, which I didn't mention in the Ozzy Osbourne tribute.
Ozzy Osbourne
which was great. But Robbie Louis Stevenson,
author of Treasure Island. Okay, so there's going to be a star-studded remake of Treasure Island. It's going to have. Oh, hold on. Oh, yeah, Hayley Atwell's going to be in it. She's going to be Bess Hawkins. That's great. Boardwalk Empire's Jack Houston as Aaron Graham. Oh, there's lots of good people in it. That's exciting.
I love the way you're reading this.
I know, because I can't remember everyone's names because, you know, my age.
What's interesting is MGM Plus are clearly obsessed with this kind of, like, old IP. They did Robin Hood, didn't they, recently? They did something else. I can't remember. They've really gone for, like... yeah, old ancient things and kind of reviving them.
ancient
novels.
Yeah. Were they trying to get a new generation of fans?
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm open-minded about it, but...
Okay.
And I think they recommissioned Robin Hood, in fact, as well. In fact, that was a new story. Did we cover that last week?
I believe I gave you that new story last week.
You're our MGM Plus correspondent in many ways.
That I also liked the Robin Hood, which is the animated one with the fox in, if you remember.
You did, yeah.
Did you two see... the God of War picture? And did we talk about it on last week's show? Because I can't remember. There was the first still from the God of War TV show.
You talked about someone being cast.
I think
God
that was Ed Skrein.
Yeah, no, you didn't. You talked about the casting, but
yes,
you didn't.
Ed Skrein,
yeah,
as Balder.
Yeah, because I said he looked nice. But you didn't. Yeah, you didn't.
You were imagining his bum, weren't you?
That's what you know, were doing. I'm all about the bum.
All about the bums. there's first picture as Ryan of Ryan Hurst as Kratos. And the internet reaction has been, shall we say, somewhat negative.
Oh, why? I want to look at it now.
Hard to say. I don't know whether it's because he doesn't look the Kratos they are familiar with, which is fair because, you know, he's an actual human. But also, I guess the picture, it looks a bit goofy. Like, someone did make
silly.
A point of saying he literally looks like he's taking a shit in the woods.
Oh.
And I was just like, okay. Which was in the
opening scene of Game of Thrones.
Night of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yes, it was. He wasn't technically in the woods, but he was beside a tree.
I mean, I think technically he was.
One tree does not make a wood.
It was a tree. It was a tree upon a hill, and in the background, there was a wooded area. Anyway,
I did just hit the mic with my headphones. We'll keep it in.
Boydie just headbutted the microphone. I genuinely don't know what people have been putting in Boydie champagne this morning, but something's gone awry.
Can I? It looks like he's giving the little boy an archery lesson.
Yes.
Is it supposed to look
well,
like
I
that?
Well, I mean, broadly speaking, I think what's happening, I suspect he is teaching Atreus to hunt.
Right. Well, I think he's done very well with his body makeup, and I think he looks fine.
God of War fan Steph Seelan has weighed in on the God of War picture.
Yeah, I mean, what's the premise of God of War? Is it?
Oh God!
Get it? No.
Are you sure?
No, imagine quickly. Can you do it quickly?
He is basically, it's rooted in Greek mythology originally, but this is the kind of reboot series which started on the PS4, and it is rooted in Norse mythology. And he is an old, retired Greek god of war now hanging out in Norse myth, and there are Norse gods, and his wife has just died. So basically, the plot of this fundamentally is his wife has died, and he needs to bury her. That is basically the plot.
That actually sounds good. I'm not even being sarcastic.
Yeah.
That actually sounds like something I'd enjoy.
Yeah.
Okay.
But all sorts of shit happens and the gods come along and Balder becomes a bellend.
Who's the little fella?
That's Atreus. That's his son, okay. Atreus. He's a dad on the stricter side, let's say. He mainly calls his son boy.
A harsh dad.
Oh. Yeah, he's a harsh dad.
He looks like a nice dad who's teaching his child some new skills in the woodland.
It's probably hard to express the harshness in a still photograph.
Well, he could be shouting at him, couldn't he? So actually,
stringing him up.
A little bit like that. Yeah. Imagine David Morrissey in one of the shows that we're going to be reviewing very shortly. He's that kind of dad.
Now,
okay.
That says it all. That's what you need to say.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
He's a Norse god, David Morrissey.
That's exactly that. He's Norse god, David Morrissey.
Oh, well, then he's very mean.
Yes, he is.
Right.
Okay. Anything else in the world of news? Has anything else happened, Boydie?
Well, I mentioned the industry thing. They confirmed the industry fifth and final season. And they were talking about, the creators were talking about how, you know, what an honor it was to do an HBO show. Because it's an HBO-BBC co-production. Yeah. I think HBO these days puts most of the money in. And how they got to Succession level. So I think it deserves to be talked about in those terms as a five seasons of an absolutely brilliant show. I also think, here's a guest, listeners, people who do watch industry, I wonder if you agree with me. I have no evidence or inside knowledge of this thing.
Okay.
But they've deployed a guy called Sebastian Stefanowicz, a new character this season, who's been seeing like glimpses of him two or three times, and he's a Reform MP. And he's played by Edward Holcroft, who was in London Spy. Have you ever seen London Spy with Ben Whishaw?
He was
great in that, and he's been in stuff on and off.
I think I probably have, because I generally try and watch everything Ben Whishaw was in.
London Spy was written by my neighbour, Tom Rob Smith, who lives two floors above me.
Anyway,
I think Edward Holcroft is going to be, his character is going to be featured heavily in the fifth and final season. I think they're kind of establishing him in a small way in this series. And I think then he'll be much more important in the next season. That's my guess.
That's your guess. You have no evidence whatsoever. This is just from the Boyd
literally
mind.
From my mind, exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Great.
I'm going to call a close on news, partly because we are on a tight schedule this week.
Oh, please God, yeah.
So let's move on to this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have Rooster on Sky Comedy. This is Bill Lawrence's latest show, and it sees Steve Carell as an author who ends up at Ludlow College, the workplace of his daughter, played by Charlie Clive, who is currently going through a very public, very messy breakup with Jamie Tart, a.k.a. Phil Dunster. And if you wondered where you could find John C. McGinley after he stepped back from the Scrubs revival, then turns out this is actually the answer. Boydie, are you going to crow about Rooster?
A little bit. John C. McGinley, by the way, you see a lot of John C. McGinley.
Yes, you don't see his bum.
No,
I'm sorry,
well,
Steph.
I mean, not yet. Nips, unless you've watched the whole series?
Nips, yes. Buns,
nips,
no.
Yeah, pretty much full-on topless John C. McGinley, which is bold for a man. You know, I'm fully in favour of him. He's 66.
He looks great in sauna. He looks absolutely fantastic.
Yes, yes. This is an interesting one because it is, as you say, it's Bill Lawrence who is the, you know, your current hero for his work on Shrinking. Ted Lasso, which we love, of course, hence the Phil Dunster. By the way, Phil, this is, I think, who I was thinking of. You know, I was talking about another show where Vladimir, where Leo Wooder was playing an American professor. Why not just make him British? Well, in this, he is just British. Phil Dunster is just British.
Yes.
And it's absolutely works. It's fine.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's such a relief.
It'll be because of the book, Vladimir.
It was a relief. And not to cut you off at all, but just to that point. When I watched this, I was like, this is exactly what Boyd and I were saying about it. Because it enhances it so much, but carry on.
So that was good. That was a good decision. So this is kind of built around. I saw Steve Carell talking in an interview about how this was like the best pilot script he's ever read and stuff. So I was like, oh, okay, interesting. I mean, it's fine.
And you were like, is it though?
I almost deployed the annoying James, is it though?
Meme,
we call it. But I didn't want to be too annoying. So, but it's fine. It's good. I liked it. The thing I liked about it was it kind of captured the American so-called liberal arts college life. I was lucky enough to spend a year in an American university, University of Massachusetts Amherst. But they have a thing called the five college system, which means you get to go to classes and at different colleges in the area, including Smith College, which is a legendary college, Amherst College, incredible, where Jacob Dylan, Bob Dylan's son, was there at the time. And it was an incredible experience. It is like a really like idyllic setting. And I think it captured that. It's visually very sunny. And this one is in somewhere in California, this fictional college that they all go to. Right. But the opening scene is of the guy of Steve Carell's character, who's the best-selling author of quite kind of a mainstream book, shall we say, being invited to give a talk to the students. And I literally went to like events where authors would give talks to us, the students, back in the day, and they'd be either inspirational or not inspirational or something. So it kind of, for me, it was like a nostalgia trip. And it is like, this is almost in a world that is like, I feel, possibly dying out for political reasons, as I say, in America right now. But thank God, I think they still do exist like this. I think they still, so the setting is great. I really enjoyed the setting. I thought, and it felt very authentic, the way the students behave and the way the professors behave and just the general chatter. But I felt very kind of not particularly plot driven. Like there is a bit of story going on with, you know, an affair, etc., and with Phil Dunster's characters. I'm trying to spoil it. But it felt very kind of light on its feet in a good way, in quite a good way. But I guess this is Bill Lawrence's kind of mode now, almost, because I think it has that in common with Shrinking a bit. I think I actually said this when we reviewed Shrinking, that it's quite a laid-back show narratively. It's not like driven by storyline and plot. And this felt like it was actually driven by Steve Carell's character, who is weirdly, obviously, we think of Steve Carell as being a very outgoing, kind of vivacious, you know, he generally plays, even, you know, even the character from The American Office was, you know, overbearing in a way. Whereas in this, he's kind of like, he's slightly wary of interacting with people. He's got kind of like issues about anxieties about just meeting new people and stuff. So he meets this a woman who works at the university and he's kind of shy about her, etc. So it's an interesting kind of character for him to play. But I didn't feel an enormous... When I finished, I watched two episodes.
No, I was about to say,
I watched two. And then, yeah, the end of the first episode, this the big thing happens and it is quite funny, but it's I think it's quite gentle. It's quite, as I say, it's quite story light in a way, or at least it doesn't, it's definitely not melodramatic. But I kind of believed it. I believed in the characters, which is a big step, one step. But I didn't exactly go to the end of the second episode and think, I have to carry on watching this now. It was more of a, I might find time to watch this at some point. I can sense Steph, I feel Steph either loved it or, I don't know, because she's so pro Bill Lawrence.
You are very pro Lawrence.
Right. If I didn't know that this was a Bill Lawrence thing, I'd still love it, I think. I really loved it. This is the thing that I watched as many... We had six available. I don't know if you guys had more because you get special privileges. But there were six available and I watched all six. For me, this is... I get what you're saying about his more recent... the more recent roles he's played. But for me, this is kind of a bit of the 40-year-old virgin, the college years, in terms of his character. There's a lot of elements of characters that he's played in the past coming together. There is a bit of his character from The Office. There's a lot of the... It's very much a... He's divorced. He's having to find his feet again. I think what Bill Lawrence does so well is he makes every single character interesting. And they're not overbearing characters, which is why it feels comfortable. And I think I talked about this last podcast, why I don't really like starting again things is because the setting to me is so important and is so much a character. And I absolutely agree with you. It's beautiful where they are. And it really makes you feel part of the campus. I absolutely loved it. And it does get more exciting. And I, not to labor on the point, but someone's bottom appears several times.
God.
And it is also...
God, what a bottom-themed episode.
If you don't subscribe, so you didn't get to listen to Pilot Plus, we reviewed Vladimir, which was we universally hated. And
this didn't is hate it. You hated
well,
it.
Well, you didn't love
didn't
it, though,
love
did
it.
You?
No. University hated is a strong...
Yes, it was very much hated by you,
yeah,
Steph.
Okay. Universally hated by Steph Seaman.
All right, it's terrible. Universally hated by me, it was awful. But this gets loads of the things that should have got right.
Yeah,
right.
This is better.
So the fact that he's this sexy British professor... And God, he's brilliant. He gets really...
Phil Dunster gets his bum out. He doesn't in episode one or two.
He does. Okay. Oh, he does.
look at glee on your face.
Oh, it's so great, though. And the way that the storylines progress, if you get all the way to episode six, it's wonderful. And it's not... Are you kind of alluding to the fact you think it's a bit slow? Or you don't? You think it's storyline?
I wouldn't slow... It slows a bit much. Just... I think there's something about it. I didn't find it riveting. Like, I found it nice and enjoyable. It's kind of that kind of tone.
Did you care about? I think for me, the other thing is, like, I really cared about all of them. I love Danielle Deadweiler's character. She's great in this.
Yeah, him snubbing her, I didn't buy that.
That's why you have to keep watching to find out what happens.
Yeah,
you know, the advancing storylines, I feel like he's so good at kind of unraveling each character. You know, very intimate, all their intimate troubles really slowly and brilliantly, but in a way that still keeps me interested. I loved everything.
Did you just say James just raised an eyebrow in the most either that's a, like, she's gone mad, she's lost it, or it's
I suppose because you are ascribing to this show a level of depth that I did not witness.
How many did you watch?
Because just the first one, which, to be fair, doesn't even cover the setup of the show.
Okay, so here's my thing when you talk about depth, and I get really annoyed when sometimes we watch one show and then we say something and no one likes it, and then I've watched loads of it and I tell you should have watched more because it's really good,
but, and we just ignore you.
Yeah, and you just ignore me, and then you don't go back and watch Small Profits like I told you you should. Anyway, I'll put that aside. there's the relationship between Steve Carell's character and his daughter's character is beautiful. And it's really...
They are good together and they've got good chemistry. And Charlie Clive is great. She was great in Pure and she was in Lazarus Project as well.
This is a story about... There's some great lines in this about their relationship, and later on his ex-wife comes back into it, and she... I won't give away who she's played by, but that's a great episode. I'm so... relieved that John C. McGinley has left the Scrubs reboot, which I wasn't completely satisfied with, to join this, because I love his character in this. And it is funny. Maybe it's not bellyache funny, but it's comfort funny. And it's, you end up really caring about these people. Certainly I did. James couldn't give a shit about them, and I can tell by the look on his face. Yeah.
So. Do you know what? I think my issues with it are twofold. One, I have a particular hatred for the comedy device of misunderstandings that go awry, you know, and it's like, and the sort of slightly, almost slapsticky. So the event that happens at the end of the first episode is so ludicrous, and it's so over the top, and it's so, oh my god, this is happening. Oh, you know, it's absolutely farcical. And I was like, and which is ironic because obviously I love Fawlty Towers, which is pure farce, but didn't love that. And also, there's a scene in this where there's a classic ha 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 comedic like misunderstanding where he's looking at one thing and then people think he's looking at something else through a hedge. And it was just like, that's a Naked Gun joke. Like, what are you doing? And I found the humor to be at times just a bit, I don't want to say basic, but you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't particularly taken by it. Don't get me wrong. I do not think this is a bad show at all. It's quite, as you said, it's quite comfortable to watch. I found it quite a nice comfort watch. Steve Carell is always a lot of fun. And so, you know, there was good times to be had. But I was like, again, I'm not hugely invested in the story. I'm not finding this laugh out loud funny. And I find the sort of humorous track that it was going down just a little bit basic.
I know what you mean. Yeah, it definitely has moments of silliness.
It does.
His kryptonite. TV comedy silliness. But I think it actually needs... I almost have the opposite criticism. I think it needs more moments more like that.
Well, you kind of need to either embrace it or not.
Yeah.
But it feels, it's quite silly, whereas you're right, maybe if it was very silly, it would work, or if it was less silly, it
would
work.
I think it
needs,
for me, it needs more silly moments, more jokes, more funny, more unashamed.
Right. I think
comedy.
One of Bill Lawrence's great talents is he doesn't go over the top. He makes these people believable. His characters are believable, and the incidents in his shows are all believable and you think they could happen. And
you've seen Scrubs, right?
Yeah, I know, but as I said, I don't enjoy this reboot. I think, I'm primarily thinking of Shrinking. And lots of more funnier things do happen. If, like me, you're committed and you've watched six episodes.
You are the consummate professional.
Yeah, but I don't agree with either of you. I just don't think you can say that when you've only watched one episode. I'm sorry.
No, I watched two.
I don't think you can say it if you watch one or two episodes.
Well, then, since Boydie and I have both been disqualified from talking about Rooster, we fall to Steph to tell us what it's about.
Yeah.
It's great. I think if you love Shrinking, you'll like it. Is it as good as Shrinking? No, but it...
Is it better than Vladimir? Yes, to be fair. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, listen, college sets. You know, it's interesting how many college sets, because in a way, Gone is like school set, isn't it? But
yeah,
professors teaching kids and that whole milieu in wealthy kind of...
yes.
Everything's better than Vladimir.
Luxury,
like, adverts
lavish.
Are better than Vladimir.
Wow.
Your hatred of Vladimir
you've
gone off the deep end.
Yeah.
You have, yeah. But at least, I would say this for this show that I've forgotten the name of already.
Rooster.
I will say it doesn't open with a shocking scene, and then it could have opened with the scene at the end of episode one and then gone 10 weeks earlier. You know, it could have done that, but thank fuck it didn't.
This is like, you know, Steve Carell's wonderful character finding his feet again, and it's delightful.
Best pilot script he's ever read.
Yeah, and yes, Steve, you're probably
right.
Is it
though?
Oh, God.
Rooster, then. Sky Comedy and Indeed Now on the 9th of March, which is what day, buddy?
It's Monday. It's today.
It's today.
This podcast on the day it comes out. And why wouldn't you?
Surely you get up and you think, right.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to say, there's a good doggy in, isn't there? Because the picture we use in here, there's a lovely doggy.
The
dog is good. So I knew it had some good marks for that.
And also, Phil Dunst's character exclusively speaks to the dog in Italian, and it's so cute.
That's good. Yeah.
So cute.
Oh, okay.
Rooster, then, be sure to stick around for the buttock shot, which comes in a later episode.
Totally worth it. Just for
Bump
that.
Bum? Who knows?
No, I promise you. I promise you, you're seeing
it. Steph can tell.
No, I know I could. Yeah. No.
Next up this week, we have the return of The Capture on BBC One. This is a show that handled deep fakes and digital manipulation before they became ubiquitous, really, in real life. It now returns 4 years, 4 years after the second series, feeling more timely than ever before, I'm saying. This once again sees Holiday Grainger as Rachel Carey, who is now, because this takes, even though it's 4 years later, this is set 1 year after Series 2, she is now running SO15, which is the Counterterrorism Command Unit, and she's spearheading the launch of an all-new camera designed to separate real footage from manipulated ones, as well as presumably the AI slop videos of cats with machine guns. Steph, if you are indeed the real Steph, give us the lowdown on Series 3. Do you watch The Capture, Steph? Have you seen Series 1 and 2?
So I watched the first series of The Capture.
Yes.
And then I did, for some reason, I don't know why, I haven't seen the second series, which is stupid, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Very stupid. It's deeply stupid.
But idiotic.
When did it come out, the second series?
4 years ago.
Yeah, you just said that, yeah, 4 years ago.
4 years ago, okay, baby.
Oh, Steph was like, oh yeah, I was busy. Four years ago, I was busy.
You know, well, like,
you're having a baby.
No, because she's 6 now, but she's like 2.
So you were 2 years into having a baby.
Yeah, I was just like, you know, a lot of soft play and just doing all those classes and
your
shit.
Your poor daughter's having taking the blame for your shoddy TV.
It's her fault. There's like a gaping hole in my viewing because I was, you know, watching fucking shit on Netflix, you know, all that kiddie stuff. Anyway. Wow. I mean, I don't think I've been as blown away by a show. I almost couldn't believe what I was watching. Firstly, it scares the shit out of me because I'm watching this and I'm thinking, oh my God, is this actually happening? Because it's all so believable and it probably is all happening now.
It's much more believable now than it was 4 years ago, yeah.
Well, so this whole thing, this capture thing, which is the AI faces and what people use.
Correction. They talk about correction.
Sorry,
correction is digitally manipulating video footage.
Yes, sorry, I meant correction.
To essentially make people do things they're not doing or to show people as being other people, which back then when season 2 came out, series 2 came out, was science fiction. Now it's just Instagram.
I mean, my God, the amount of times that they could have, like, it was a cliffhanger in this episode. I just kept going, oh my God. It's really heart-stopping, isn't it? It's just, God, it delivers. This is definitely not a show you can watch while doing anything else because you're so focused on what fuck is happening and thinking, oh my God, how is Holiday Grainger going to get out of this situation? It's so, like, it's really intense. So this is going to sound strange, but this episode felt like a series finale. I don't know if you all agree with that point.
Well,
I think
a
you
lot,
mentioned
there's a yeah, lot like, happening.
Yeah, 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 and I was like, how, if it starts like this, where the fuck is it going to go? Because this is unbelievable. I don't want to give it, it's hard to talk about this without giving away any spoilers. I don't want to give away spoilers because the bang, bang, bang of this episode, the pacing of this episode is so insanely brilliant. It's masterful. I don't want to ruin it for you. You should just watch it because
it's hard to talk about this.
It's really hard to talk about.
Anything.
Yeah,
yes. There are a lot of plot twists from the very first episode.
I mean, God, I really was blown away by how good this was. But like I said, it does feel like a finale, so I don't know what they're gonna do. I'm hoping that you've watched more.
They only gave us 2 episodes.
I watched 2, yeah.
Right, yeah. I only watched the first one because I was busy doing...
kicks off in the first one, to be fair, and then it continues to kick off in the second
one.
So.
Does it keep that pace?
Yeah. Oh, it's...
I was annoyed. They told me they were going to give me 3 episodes and I haven't got a third episode yet, so right. I'm just furious.
Boy's furious, furious.
It is absolutely fucking brilliant.
Yes.
Brilliant.
And this is the most, I think The Capture is the most underrated show. A show that is absolutely phenomenal. I thought season 1 was great, season 2 was even better. We did Ben Chanin, the creator of it, did our pilot live show where we debuted the first episode of series 2, I seem to remember. And he's somehow ratcheted up even more. Well, he has done a really difficult job of, as James said, like reflecting the fact that now you can do these fake facial recognition and all of that. You know, on Instagram and on social media, pretty much anyone can do it, and it's horrifically real looking. It's insane. But he's somehow, to me, I don't know anything about, you know, apart from what you see in the news and what you see around you, but he seems to have kind of tapped into what's going on in the world in all of these seasons, like advancing it just enough to make you feel like he's completely on top of what is the latest tech. And what they're working on, what Holiday Grainger's gang are working on, seems to be the kind of thing that we would need right now,
yeah,
that people still be working on. At the same time, there's an investigation going on into the use of it and abuse of it that happened in series two. She don't know who she can trust at all. Like, she's surrounded by all different people. Leah Williams' character, Ron Perlman's character from the CIA, Ben Miles, all these people kind of are returning from previous shows. Papa Seydou, of course. But you just don't know. They're all like, she can't fucking trust anyone, basically. And it's got that paranoiac conspiracy thriller thing off to an absolute T. It's up there for me with Line of Duty.
I agree.
Just in terms of, and the storytelling, as you say, is so propulsive. There's so many twists. It almost goes, right, Line of Duty, you thought you could watch an episode of Line of Duty and, you know, they'd have at least five or six things going on. The final shot at the end of the first episode is going to have you absolutely breathlessly wanting to carry on. This outdoes it even more. It's an absolute, it's like it's thrown down the gauntlet, you know, to other...
It's a mic drop, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's an absolute mic drop. It's like Ben Chenin has somehow thrown down the gauntlet to his fellow dramatist working in this world of paranoid conspiracy thriller kind of stuff. And he's just done an amazing job. I think it's phenomenal. I think it's like, you know, if this isn't up there with my top shows of the year,
oh,
I would be stunned.
Yeah, I mean, it is thrilling.
Holiday Grainger, I watched the first episode thinking, no one does reaction shots. In episode one, there's a thing, she's watching a thing play out.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to spoil anything. Everything is played out.
The face acting.
She is genius at face acting. And I think, you know, because kind of the storyline and what's going on rests on her face acting in many ways.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. Yeah,
no, she's
brilliant.
Amazing. There's a scene in her apartment. Again, I'm not going to give it away, but I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's phenomenal. It's so thrilling, this. So, so thrilling. I totally agree with you. It's more than up there with Line of Duty. More than up there.
But what's hilarious, kind of, is what Boyd said, is that if you were to ask the majority of people, do you watch The Captor? They'd be like,
yeah,
what?
No, exactly, yeah.
Never
that's
have
why,
heard of
that's
it.
That's why I mean it's underrated.
Yeah,
not so
which
much,
is deranged.
I think if you've watched it, you rate it as highly as it needs to be. But it is weird. It doesn't feel like it's part
why?
Of the culture. I think hopefully this will be a turning point.
Yeah, why is that though, do you think? Why is it?
That's a very good question. I genuinely don't know. I guess there just hasn't been as much noise about it. But as Boyd said, I do wonder whether this third series really will land, for the simple reason that previously it didn't feel like super far-fetched, but now this is our lived reality. Like when all the war stuff started kicking off with Iran and whatnot, the amount of stuff that was on social media pretending to be a lot of battleships sinking, and it was just all AI-generated nonsense. So we are already at the point now where you cannot trust anything you see. At all.
Yeah.
Because it's basically photoreal, the manipulation is. And that's the premise of this show, that they're able to just manipulate video footage. And while before it was just like, oh, that's kind of a scary idea, now it's just like, shit, this is life, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that maybe will resonate with people. But even if none of that was the case, it is still a nuts and bolts brilliant conspiracy thriller. Mm. It's fantastically thrilling. The setup is good. The storytelling is great, because the previous ones, like the first series, was, as you know, it was about a guy who'd been being convicted of a crime based on video image that had been doctored. This has ratcheted up the stakes. And series two with Papi Seydou had more. It was more thrilling. There was more going on, more action in it. This one has sort of seen it crank up another notch, like shifted into an even higher gear. Mm. So now, and I think only with this third series, it almost has the velocity. In fact, not even almost, it 100% has the velocity of latter season Line of Duty at this point.
Yeah,
because it goes along pell-mell at 1,000 miles an hour from the very first episode. Mm. And you're just like, well, strap in. And it's absolutely brilliant.
I think what was so exciting to me about it is because we've watched a couple of shows that we've mentioned, they seemed a bit slow and it seemed like you could be doing something else. And this, I really enjoyed the fact that you had to watch, and actually you really couldn't take your eyes off it, because it was that thrilling and it was that exciting.
Yeah.
But yeah, God, what a show.
I'm also obsessed with Rachel Carey's green coat. You know how all you say all detectives like you need, it's outerwear. It's all about outerwear when it comes to TV detectives. Whether it be
just looking at a picture of it. She's wearing a blue coat in this shot, so
a publicity shot, isn't it? And also that's a suit. She's not wearing a coat.
Yeah, that's when she goes to meet him.
But like, you know, the green coat that she wears. Yes. Like, you know, it's not. I mean, it's not Lenny James's puffer. You know, not that he's a detective, but you know what I mean?
But
that green coat, I was like, that's a good coat.
Luther's coat.
Iconic outerwear is the thing for TV dramas. I think it can elevate a show, and that is a great green coat.
Lenny is a detective of sorts.
He's like a home detective, yes. And if I were a home detective, I too would have a yellow puffer.
Home detective.
He detects things at home. Yeah.
He has a puffer jacket in pilot yellow.
Yes. No, I know.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, very on brand. But yes, good. Yes, good outerwear is very important.
Okay. Well, God, what a show.
What a show. The Capture, then, Series 3, which lands on BBC One when, Boydie?
Well, it just started yesterday, Sunday, the 8th of March. It's going out weekly, and it's not all on the iPlayer. You see, you can tell when a thing is, when the BBC knows it's got a very exciting, tense thriller on its hand, when it does not put it all out
that
in one go. So you have to watch it week by week by week.
Not available on iPlayer or on Boydie's screener account.
I know.
Well, it's season, episode one's available on iPlayer, but episode two...
Sorry, how many episodes are there?
Just one so far. Just one a week.
No,
Sunday
no,
week.
Just...
Oh, six,
total.
I believe.
Six.
Just one. This is one episode of the show. It's basically a
it's
film.
It's a film.
I believe it's six episodes.
Six episodes.
Yes.
Fantastic. Finally, this week, we have Gone on ITV1, a missing persons drama with David Morrissey as the kind of martinet headmaster of a posh boys' boarding school and Emma Appleton as his daughter, who is also a part of the faculty. Eve Miles is a police officer and she gets involved in their lives when Morrissey's wife goes missing. And with him coming across very strongly like a massive wrong-un, it all seems a little bit suspicious. This, of course, comes from George Kay, who brought us such shows as Lupin and Hijack, we should say. And the show explores the idea of elitism and how privilege can make people feel untouchable by the rules that govern normal people. Who better then than Virgin Gold Club member Boyd Hilton to tell us all about it?
Gold member Austin Powers.
Yes, Boyd Hilton in Gold Member.
Let me just say that I very much enjoyed this because... So it's funny, there's so many thrillers. I mean, there's not only so many thrillers on TV at the moment, there's thrillers about people disappearing left, right and centre. Vanished. Yeah, we did that one recently. Yeah. There was the one about the sleepover with the kid who vanishes. I can't remember what that was called.
Was it All Her Fault?
No, All Her Fault was another different one.
The one with the play date, one that was play date and then got called something else, with Holiday Granger. Yes.
Which is actually running on ITV now. Running on, I think, Wednesday or Thursday nights at the moment. So you can't move for disappeared people, basically. They're all over the fucking place.
But and they're not, by are the they?
It's kind of the point.
I've got to think about titles, right? Gone. It's just like... Isn't that? Couldn't you have come up with something more better? More
you just
better?
Said you really liked it.
No. It's the title. Literally the title. I just worry that it's going to get lost and forgotten. You know, at the end of the year when you go thinking, which one was that? Was it Vanished or was it Gone or was it, you know?
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was trying to think, what are the titles of these things they're talking about?
I know. I do find like generic titles are
the missing.
A nightmare.
That's what I'm getting
for those
at.
Of us
missing.
Who struggle to remember the names of shows at the best of
well,
times.
Exactly.
Like, things like, it's like, you know, It's Not Her Fault or Nobody Wants This or stuff.
At
it's
least
like.
That's
stop naming shows things
all
like that.
All Her Fault is better than just Gone. I mean, it just feels like a bit so generic.
I think thought it was quite bold.
Maybe.
Just kind of
maybe.
Gone.
Anyway, that's a minor detail.
It really is.
I think what George Kay is great at is what she did with Hijack and what was the other thing he said he worked on? Lupin. Get over my senility. You have to get used to it.
Lupin.
I've been dealing with it for many years.
Yeah. We should say Hijack, Lupin, one word titles.
Yeah, that's true. And Lupin, just a one word title about a character's name. So, yeah, I mean, that's obviously cheating there. But anyway, what George Kay is really good at is taking these very big kind of genre pieces, if you like, thrillers, essentially, or, you know, Lupin, a crime caper kind of thriller, Hijack mixing thriller with like disaster movie almost tropes, and kind of making them. Elevating them above and beyond what is the norm for this kind of show, I think. And I think it helps that you've got David Morrissey, who I love in everything, and does brilliant, lugubrious, kind of disapproving, embittered, twisted characters brilliantly. And he's like oozing inner turmoil in this role. I think he's fantastic. Just the way he walks and talks and stands there and stares at people.
He's got incredible presence.
Incredible presence. And Eve Miles, I have to say, she's absolutely equally brilliant. She is, and she's just great at being that kind of likable off the, her dialogue, I think it's really well written because her dialogue feels completely naturalistic and establishes her as kind of a normal human being in this context of people where she's embroiled in a case that she's kind of is investigating on the side because she's kind of sidelined in the investigation, but dealing with her frankly irritating colleagues who undervalue her and dealing with the various suspects for this in this case of this disappeared woman. And she just makes it so real and natural. She just imbues it with the naturalism, I think, is really fantastic. And she's always been brilliant. Going back to Torchwood, the brilliant Doctor Who spin-off.
Broadchurch.
So this is a brilliant role for her. And the scenes between the two of them are just great. Like, you really want more and more of those. It ends up being a pretty traditional whodunit, to be honest. Like, there's enough candidates and suspects to...
Have you watched all of it?
No.
This
is what I was going to say. I'm up to episode four. I've watched four of six. I think this is a six-part. Okay. Was it five or six-part?
I think it's six.
Six, yeah. You've watched the whole thing.
No, I haven't watched the whole thing. Okay. Rooster was the thing I watched.
Well, I have to say, you know, I've got to the end of episode four, and you're... George Kay does a brilliant job of swinging from one kind of suspect to another and making one character more prominent. You think, oh, they've definitely done it. That character's definitely done it. And then, no, like 10 minutes later, oh, no, actually, maybe you've brought this, you're giving us scenes with this character, maybe they've done it. I genuinely have no idea right now, three quarters of the way through the series, who the fuck did it and what the fuck exactly happened. And that's really clever. And my final note of acclaim, because I do think this is a really good show, it's harder than you think. I think he's very good at making the psychological decisions that people take in these situations believable and real. Like, so often, I was talking to someone else about this the other day, a TV writer. So often on TV thrillers, and there are a dime a dozen every week. There's another, right? You Queen of Crime, obviously.
Oh, there
you,
are.
You're in touch with all of them.
We review many
of them, if not most of them. And often you just kind of like there are things that happen that are just so unlikely and ridiculous. Decisions being made by characters in the middle of these kind of plots. You think, why would you do that? That's ridiculous. But this, I think George Kay goes out of his way of explaining why people do things in certain situations that seem silly and misguided, but actually he gives you the psychological reasons why. And I totally bought into all of that. So I think it's a really enjoyable, entertaining and gripping show. And I think it's a cut above the usual, you know, prime time. And it's not quite, it's in a week of The Capture and Gone.
God, what a week.
It is a really good week for big mainstream thrillers. The Capture is genius. And this is very, very, very good, I think. It's really good.
Yeah. Had I not seen The Capture, I would have been, I think I would have been even more excited about this. And if Undersalt Marsh had not been released this year, I would also be more excited about this. I think this is really good. I really love it when you've got a detective who has a lingering unsolved case that also becomes part of the main story.
That old chestnut.
I just love it when there's something that's been giving them some turmoil for years, and it's traditionally like 8 years ago that something happened and a case they didn't solve. And Eve Mars has that, and she also has her own demons and relationship demons. But my God, James is going to murder you. This is going to be the next thriller.
We've got 1 minute left.
Okay. Oh. David Morrissey, my God, he scared the absolute shit out of me. He's so brilliant in this domineering, overbearing role. And I don't think it's a spoiler to say you immediately think, oh, well, it was him.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's
by design. Yeah.
But yeah. And then it's absolutely brilliant, and I think it's going to convert James permanently to ITV dramas.
I mean, I don't think it will. I think Broadchurch did that now.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's true.
But I liked it. Didn't love it, but I did like it. I thought it was solid. I think you're right. I think Eve Mars is fantastic. David Morrissey is magnificent in this. Emma Hamilton, I think, is really good in this as well. I think she plays that role brilliantly. This kind of, and adds to the kind of weird dynamic within that family. It's also interesting because it's desaturated heavily. To almost make it look like a period piece, which I thought was an interesting choice. Like, initially, I was like, oh, is this set in the 80s? I thought initially, because it has that kind of washed out look.
Yes, it does.
Which I thought was an interesting, stylistic wrinkle. But I thought it was a really interesting setting for that kind of classic missing person mystery. Mm. And I really like the idea that they wrong-foot you. I mean, do they wrong-foot you? For all I know, he literally did it, because I haven't seen the whole show. But he's so dour and moody and difficult and borderline coercive controlling. Well, certainly that's the impression he gives. You don't actually know that when you meet him, and he's so, like, every red flag for the detectives goes off the second they meet him. And I just thought that was a really fun way of framing it.
It goes through, like, sometimes you initially, you definitely did it. Then you're like, oh, no, he didn't. That's a red herring. Then you're like, oh, well, actually, he's done it again. It flows brilliantly like that. Can I just mention the director, Richard Laxton, who is brilliant? He directed Joan last year. Do you remember Joan?
The story of
that. And he did him, it goes back to him and her.
Sophie Turner.
It goes back to him and her. I remember seeing him on set for him and her, the classic Russell Tovey.
Not his and hers, the fantastic Netflix show.
No, exactly. But he's done a brilliant job of creating that. He has got a visual style to it, which I think is really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, Gone Then, which is on the ITV when, Boydie?
That's not yesterday as well. Sunday. That's on Sundays and Mondays for 3 weeks.
Sundays and Mondays.
Yeah, that's
Sundays
quite common and transmission plan at the moment. Yeah, it's quite common.
Transmission plan.
Transmission plan.
Other things out this week.
Oh my God, it's quite a busy week, isn't it? This, I am going to...
This is official. Pages now. This is fine.
This is official. Yeah, it's okay to turn
this
page.
Yeah, this is official.
Listeners, this is what James gets furious when I turn the page.
Yes, it's maddening.
Okay, the Louis Theroux documentary, the aforementioned, is on Wednesday on the Netflix.
Yes, Inside the Manosphere.
There's a so-called This Close starting on ITV on Thursday, which is created by deaf actors. And it's all about deaf characters and what they have to put up with. Claudia Winkleman's chat show starts on Friday. We will need to know that. 10:40 BBC One. Outlander, the final season begins on MGM Plus. Oh, that began on MGM Plus on Saturday, sorry. Oh, A Woman of Substance is
A Woman of Substance. BBC.
Any other week, Body would have done it. Maybe we'll
Is it Channel 4?
Yeah, Channel 4. Wednesday.
One Piece Season 2 lands on Netflix, if you're into that. That's on Tuesday.
Ellis Season 2. Remember Ellis, the Channel 5 detective drama with Sharon D. Clarke, the great Sharon D. Clarke.
Sure, why not?
James doesn't. Okay, Scarpetta.
Yes.
Scarpetta, Nicole Kidman.
Prime Video, Wednesday, heavily embargoed.
Which we will cover on Pilot Plus, as well as quite possibly Louis Theroux.
Okay, yeah, so Scarpetta starts on Wednesday on Prime Video. Virgin River's back on Thursday. One of Kay's favourites, Wednesday the 12th.
And did you mention The Madison, the other Yellowstone spin-off?
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, so with Michelle Pfeiffer, right?
Is it actually a Yellowstone spin-off?
It is, yeah. It is. It's a Yellowstone spin-off, and that starts on Paramount Plus on Saturday.
There you go.
There we go. And did you mention the other Bennett sister?
He didn't.
BBC One Sunday.
No, you're absolutely right. The other Bennett sister, which is on the Sunday, yes. Yeah. If I'd known
so
that, we should have reviewed that as well.
So a lot going on.
With Ruth Jones.
Yeah. A lot of shows going on. Mm. But that's all we've got time for on this week's podcast. If you haven't left us a review, and honestly, we've been going now for about 8 years, so there's really no excuse. But if you'd like to leave us a 5-star rating, then we would obviously appreciate it. And if you want to follow us on the social medias, at Boyd Hilton, at Steph Seeland, at James C. Dyer, God knows I need new Instagram followers, so please feel free to, and at Pilot TV Pod. And we will be in your ears on Thursday doing Scarpetta, and next week, so many things: Invincible, Imperfect Woman. I think technically Peaky Blinders lands on Netflix that week, so if we're going to cover it, that might be the week we cover that. We'll see. But yeah, good times. Goodbye from Boydie.
Goodbye.
I thought we were going to do our pick of the week.
Oh, we didn't do our pick of the week. It was the capture, isn't it? No, it's the capture. For all three of us, it's the capture.
Okay, it is the capture. But depending on what your mood in it.
No,
might
it's
be
the capture.
It's the capture, isn't it?
It's 100%.
Stop the capture. Steph.
Yeah.
Okay, it is the capture. It's fantastic.
Okay, fine. And it's goodbye from the bum obsessed Steph Seeland.
Listen, just take my advice. Bridgerton, Rooster.
What time to be alive for bums?
Steph's bum watch. That's what's going to be a new segment on this podcast. Right.
It's fine.
Okay, let's go now. We can put this whole thing behind us. Pilot out.